don't stop till on Friday, and I start having me a ball. Cause I got a good feeling, and I don't feel no pain at all. Friday's my day.
Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. About 7 past the hour. Welcome to the Molloy program tonight on the Nova M Radio Network. Just doing some last-minute show prep here. We had rain in Georgia today. Thunder for the first time in I don't know how long. So what happens? The power goes away. which put everything kind of a little bit behind. But we're here. this is your last chance, by the way, to talk with us live in 2007. The number here, in case you don't have it down, is 800-989-1480. Next Monday and Tuesday will be encore presentations of this program. And then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and the following Monday, 4 days, KTLK, LA's KTLK, Johnny Wendell will again sit in for me. I'll return live again on Tuesday, January the 8th, unless I get butoed or something. We're going to cover a little bit of that ongoing tragedy. It certainly is a family tragedy for the Buto family. A continuation. This family has endured more political murder and mayhem than even the Kennedys. But there's a different point of view that I want to share with you. It comes from a blogger who is certainly more understanding of the situation than you and I. He's an Afghan. And he wrote something called Benazir Bhutto, The Fall of a Corrupt Puppet. I'll get to that a little bit later this evening. The Forward, the Jewish newspaper, The Forward, if you're familiar with it, then you know what I'm talking about. If not, you can check them out, forward.com, not The Forward, but forward.com. They had an editorial within the past day or two. It talks about the attempt by Kucinich and now Robert Wexler to get articles of impeachment presented by the House Judiciary Committee to open impeachment hearings, I should say, and take testimony, and then decide on articles of impeachment against Bush and Cheney. Let me quote a little bit what the Forward is saying. An impeachment revolt is underway. A call for the impeachment of Dick Cheney was introduced in the House last April by Dennis Kucinich. Excuse me. Kucinich argued that the party's image, the Democratic Party's image, is less important than its principles. He and his allies believe that the contrast with the Republicans' Clinton witch hunt would only show how responsible the Democrats are. As for the clock running out, that's precisely why it's urgent, not to unseat anyone, which they won't, but to get the facts on record. Besides, they say they have a duty to the Constitution, given the abundant evidence, betraying a covert American agent, falsifying intelligence to start an unjustified war, systematically violating individuals' rights by illegal wiretapping, and of course more, and on and on and on. Under the circumstances, they say, removing a president or vice president from office is not optional. It is mandatory. The Constitution, Article 2, Section 4, says that executive officers, when found guilty of high crimes, quote, shall be removed from office, end quote. Nothing there about can be removed if you're not too scared. The Forward goes on to say, of course, the real game is about power. Kucinich's resolution was hustled to the House Judiciary Committee, where it was buried by the chairman, John Conyers of Michigan. On November 6th, after being ignored for half a year, Kucinich formally resubmitted his resolution. By now, it had picked up 22 House co-sponsors. Eventually, that number grew to 24. The day after, a second resolution was introduced by Florida Representative Robert Wexler, along with two Midwestern colleagues, demanding that the Judiciary Committee bring Kucinich's bill promptly to a vote. This was ignored, too. For what it's worth, of the measure's 27 signed backers, Kucinich and his 24 co-sponsors, Wexler and an ally, plus one more who signed both, fully 18 or two-thirds of the people demanding impeachment hearings are either black or Jewish. It shows that the old coalitions for justice are hardier than you think. It also shows how limited is the power of minorities when they can't mobilize the majority. Two-thirds are either black or Jewish. Two more months of silence followed, including a near-total press blackout. This month, Wexler submitted an opinion article to the Washington Post, the New York Times, and the Miami Herald. All three found it unfit to print. On December 14th, failing all else, Wexler launched a website, WexlerWantsHearings.com. Within 2 weeks, it gathered 100,000 signed supporters, despite press silence. What happens next? The Forward asks. That's up to the Democratic leadership. They could hold firm, bury the Kucinich-Wexler initiative, and spend the next year passing good laws, most of which will be vetoed, confirming the public's worst images of Democratic fecklessness. They might ultimately take next year's slam-dunk election and blow it, leaving us with four more Republican years. Or they could choose courage over caution and begin impeachment proceedings. No, nobody will be removed from office. There's neither time nor national will for that. But the nation will be served notice that not all impeachments are frivolous and nakedly partisan, and that there are limits to executive power in a democracy. That's a principle worth fighting for. The Forward. Or if you go to the website, forward.com. Jewish newspaper, their editorial. I didn't realize that fully two-thirds of the supporters of Kucinich and now Wexler are either Jewish or of African descent. Two-thirds. In Vermont, Brattleboro, Vermont, activists there are trying to get an arrest warrant for Bush and Cheney for war crimes. They are petitioning to put an item regarding this on a town meeting agenda in March that would make Bush and Cheney subject to arrest and indictment if they ever step foot in the southeastern Vermont community. Now, oddly, Bush has visited every state as president, except Vermont. Kurt Dimes, who's 54, retired a machinist who led the drive for this petition, says, quote, "This petition is as radical as the Declaration of Independence, and it draws on that tradition in claiming a universal jurisdiction when governments fail to do what they're supposed to do," end quote. The town meeting would require about 1,000 signatures presented to the town meeting to place a binding item on the agenda. The measure asks the following, quote, "Shall the select board instruct the town attorney to draft indictments against President Bush and Vice President Cheney for crimes against our Constitution and publish said indictment for consideration by other municipalities," end quote. Today, the White House did not immediately respond to requests for comment. So, yeah, we're focused on Pakistan, and that's proper. But there are Americans who are still pushing forward with attempting to stop this crime syndicate from its continuation of the destruction of everything this country has fought for 230-some years. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Charmaine, if you have a big dream, we have a small X.
21 past the hour. And there's this. Also, I wanted to get this into the lineup here early. The guy who ordered, the CIA chief who ordered the destruction of these videotapes of how we torture detainees, he has said that he will seek immunity, or he may seek immunity, depends on what kind of a deal he can get, from prosecution in exchange for testifying before the House Intelligence Committee. This is the same deal that basically that Oliver North got back when the unraveling began of the murder and torture in Central America. His name is Jose Rodriguez. He's the former head of the CIA's clandestine service. And according to his colleagues, former and current, he is not about to become the fall guy. And that's what the Bush crime family always does. They find somebody and try to lay it off on that person, whereas the top 5, 6, 7 people in the Bush crime family are responsible for every filthy thing these bastards do. But Rodriguez says, not going to be me. In the he's not going to be the fall guy in all the controversy over the use of torture and the destruction of evidence that torture was occurring. And as you know, at least 4 White House staff members, including would-be Supreme Court Justice Harriet Myers, senior aide to Cheney David Addington, all of these people were involved and talked this over, and decisions were made. According to testimony from a former CIA officer, excuse me, one of the detainees, Abu Zubaydah, was subjected to the form of torture called waterboarding, and he broke, quote, after 35 seconds. He is one that admitted to just about everything that you could possibly want him to admit to. He's now in Guantanamo. There are other instances of this sort of thing, but and anyone with the sense Mother Nature gave a sack of doorknobs understands that torture testimony is absolutely useless. It is useless. People who are conditioned to have their martyrdom so tightly wrapped around themselves, they're not going to confess to anything, no matter what you do to them. And people who are a freak at torture, from the pain, psychological, physical, emotional, will admit to anything to get the pain to stop. Where in either of those examples lies anything that can be used to discover plots or to convict people of crimes? I'm not going to make a brief here against torture. If I have to sit at this radio program in this country in 2007 and talk about the reasons why torture should not be allowed as a means of eliciting testimony from someone, then I'm in the wrong country, wrong century, wrong business, wrong everything, which, by the way, I think I am. The tapes supposedly were destroyed in 2005 or the other day in Cheney's office at the old executive office building, or not completely destroyed at all. The House Intelligence Committee has subpoenaed Jose Rodriguez to appear January 16th. Larry Johnson, who's a former CIA officer, believes this whole rat's nest of corruption and filth and violence and murder and mayhem could reach deep into the White House. That means Cheney and Bush. Johnson said, quote, the CIA and Jose Rodriguez look bad, but he's probably the least culpable person in the process. He didn't wake up one day and decide, I'm going to destroy these tapes. No, he didn't. Now, Rodriguez has an interesting history. He was involved in the Iran-Contra scandal 25 years ago while working for the CIA in Latin America, when he sought protection from senior officials in the Reagan administration, including George Herbert Walker Bush. He was told, hey, get your own lawyer. So this guy has plenty of experience. Jose Rodriguez, he knows what happens. You dance with the devil and you wind up burned. And he's this rat bastard has been dancing for almost 3 decades. He's a former protege of the killer psychopath John Negroponte, who, as I mentioned in our mini-blog today, has been involved in assassinations, torture rooms, death squads in at least a dozen countries on three continents for the past three decades. John Negroponte is a demon from hell, and that's why he fits right into operations run by Elliot Abrams or Scooter Libby or who else? You know, the usual gang. Oliver North and the rest of these bastards. So it should get very interesting in January when a deal is struck. As long as Jose Rodriguez doesn't wind up, as I said in the blog today, you know, choking to death on a fishbone or getting butoed as he drives around D.C. or, you know, jumping to his death out of the 30th story of a resort hotel in Bimini. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Time to snuggle up with your favorite screamer, more Mike Malloy.
All right, before we get on to the Benazir Bhutto story, let's take a few phone calls here. It's about 25 before the hour. Barb is calling from Cave Creek, listening on KPHX, is that right?
Yeah, well, I'm on the internet right now.
Oh, hey, Barb.
Well, I just wanted to know, you know, Condoleezza Rice was the one who, you know, got a hold of her while she was living in Dubai.
Right. It was her gig, hers and Bush, you know, Rice set the whole thing up, right?
Yeah, and they convinced her to, you know, to go over there to, you know, suddenly start fighting for, you know, democracy, supposedly. Anybody who seems to declare democracy, you know, the Turks get to attack the Kurds. Everybody's forgetting that the Turks are now attacking the Kurds who declared democracy. And she's, you know, declaring democracy. She was also on her way to meet with a Kennedy, that poor boy, Teddy's son.
Yeah.
And it just smells. It smells really bad. It smells like Negroponte.
It's
a setup. I mean, and how could she not know? She lived in Dubai. She went to Harvard and Oxford. She's very much. I have a feeling she lived in a bubble of her in a weird naivete to think that she would be able to pull this off. And who told her to stand up? Who is the mole in the car? Is it the guy with the funny hat that looks like it's on backwards who told her to stand up and wave to everybody? Because everybody heard three shots, I don't care what they're saying. And that's a sharpshooter to have to hit her there.
Well, yeah, but you know the official story by the Musharraf, or the Bush-Sharraf government now, is that she died by cracking her head on the...
I saw the pictures on Time.com.
Yeah, that's... you know, what was she standing up in the sun... The sunroof.
Yeah, there was like a roof that actually unlatches and pulls up.
Right, and that's how she died. It wasn't a suicide bomber. It wasn't gunshots. It wasn't a close-up assassination with a weapon. It was, she banged her head. That's how she died. What they're trying to do there is deny her the martyrdom that they, being Bush and Musharraf and the rest of these bastards, they don't want her now to get the martyrdom that her followers will give her in Islam, someone who dies in this manner immediately becomes a martyr. They don't want this. This would be a rallying point against Musharraf. And remember, all Bush and Rice wanted, and Cheney and the rest of these bastards, was for Bhutto to go back, form a coalition leadership deal with Musharraf, give the impression that democracy was returning or being established in Pakistan, and continue to loot, rape, and pillage the country. Bhutto was just to be the latest puppet run by the Bush crime family. Because
I agree with you, but I'm not sure that she, you know.
Think she was in on it, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I have a feeling that she felt like if she could get a foothold, she could make a change. And this was her foothold, and it was her destiny. And I feel like she was one of these people who had this sense of destiny, you know, because of her birth position and the fact that, you know.
Well, there is that possibility. None of us know what sort of delusions or illusions of grandeur that someone else might have. Benazir Bhutto may have seen herself as the savior of Pakistan. But I'm, you know, the further we get away from the actual murder, the less I am doubting everything about this story, including her motivations, whether or not her motivations were to go back and become the Jose Marti or the George Washington of her country. I'm just starting to think, well, now, wait, just a second here.
Well, I feel like the bullet in her head is the bullet over the head of anybody, whether it be Kennedy, whether it be, you know, any Democrat. It's, you know, look out if you
sure.
open your mouth. I mean, you know, how many times are we going to watch people who speak out get shot down blatantly mm-hmm. by this group?
Yeah,
this is going on for generations.
And don't forget the audio that we played last night when she was interviewed by David Frost,
right.
and she mentioned the killer of Osama bin Laden. Once that slipped out, you know, it took him a month, it took him 6 weeks, but I mean, this is one way to look at it.
The woman who knew too much.
Right, the woman who knew too much. It took him 6-7 weeks, but they finally nailed her. Barb, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Let me share with you, since Barb has brought up a couple of interesting points. This is at IHSAN, Ihsan, ihsan-net.blogspot.com, ihsan-net.blogspot.com. the writer blogs a few months back, October 18, 2007, Benazir Bhutto returned to Pakistan at the behest of a three-way arrangement between herself, the hated dictator puppet Musharraf, and the United States. At the outset of this arrangement, it was clear that Bhutto would provide the democratic facade to the neocolonial project of the U.S. in Pakistan. In many ways, she was the ideal U.S. face on the, quote, democracy promotion, end quote, lie. Benazir was educated at the Imperial University of Harvard. She was articulate when speaking the lies of imperialism, couched in terms of democracy, of course, and could even appeal to some of the Islamophobic liberal left crowd with her fake social democratic credentials. And she was considered, quote, beautiful, end quote, by the gossip rags. The icing on the cake was her recent conversion to staunch secularist ideas, wrapped in a half covered headscarf, for example, and she now opposed the Islamic political parties within Pakistan. Not that these so-called Islamic parties in Pakistan have much to offer. I say recent conversion because Benazir was the one who gave the go-ahead to the horribly sectarian anti-Shia and anti-Iran Taliban. She gave them permission to go ahead, and they took over Afghanistan in late 1996. The Taliban took power in Kabul in September 1996. It was during Bhutto's rule that the Taliban gained prominence in Afghanistan. She viewed the Taliban as a group that could stabilize Afghanistan and enable trade access to the Central Asian republics, according to author Stephen Cull, C-O-L-L. He claims that her government provided military and financial support to the Taliban, even sending a small unit of the Pakistan Army into Afghanistan. But before Benazir could return to Pakistan, there was work to be done. One, Musharraf had to be convinced that his time was up, and now it was Benazir's time to serve the U.S. This took some arm-twisting, but he was convinced he would allow Benazir to become the prime minister if he was allowed to remain the president. Two, the pending corruption charges in Pakistan against her had to be dropped, since few, if any, of the big landlords or capitalist industrialists are prosecuted for corruption anyway. This was no big deal. Three, two acts had to be passed in order to allow Benazir to take the helm. First had to be a National Reconciliation Act that would absolve her of all her past corruption. And second, another constitutional amendment was to allow her to become the prime minister of Pakistan for the third time and allow Musharraf to remain president. These last two amendments were pending challenges in Pakistan's Supreme Court when Musharraf declared his martial law, got rid of the judges, and installed his own. These new judges, in blind obedience, did whatever was asked of them. The subsequent declaration of martial law by Musharraf led to some minor concerns for Benazir because she came under some slight pressure from her liberal elite supporters, so she made some half-hearted attempts to challenge the measures. However, the declaration of martial law and deposing of the judges were as much for her benefit as for Musharraf, and she eventually backed off any direct confrontation and was happy to continue as if nothing had changed. Benazir, now free of the corruption charges, free of any other constitutional roadblocks, went into political deal-making mode for her party to, quote, win, close quote, the biggest share of seats in parliament. These deals were to maintain the status quo in Pakistan. It would allow her to gain prime ministership with a host of loyal landlords and industrialists backing her, who would continue to have a free hand to loot the country of its wealth and resources. And her patron, the United States, would continue its neocolonial project unhindered without any worries about Pakistan not being a, quote, democracy, end quote. A Pakistani non-government organization reported that nearly half of the candidates of Benazir's party are feudal landlords, and most of the rest are connected to super-wealthy industrialist types. Far from being a savior of democracy, Bhutto was a savior of the feudals and the industrialists. And then he talks here about the indictment of Benazir Bhutto by a Swiss court for millions and millions and millions of dollars in fraud, and you can either believe it or don't believe it. Benazir's closeness to the present U.S. regime was even more disturbing. In a recent statement, she made the incredible claim that, quote, in the past, the United States would support dictatorships, but now it's supporting democratic forces, which is a sign of encouragement for all democratic or democracy-loving people, end quote. Whew. A little bit more of this when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Sustain the corporation. Their minutes, notes, and memos can't be shared, and by the way, does anybody know the current whereabouts of Kenneth Lay? Oh, it's national security, of the public scrutiny, policy of legal coup d'etat. Oh, we have...
Redefining Anger Management. It's Mike Malloy, only on Nova M Radio.
10 before the hour. What I'm sharing with you is something at ihsan.net.blogspot.com, written by a Pakistani who understands the issue from his point of view. To a greater degree than you or I, unless we are scholars of the intrigues and mayhem and insanity that goes on in Pakistan. Anyway, his basic position is that Benazir Bhutto was just the next in a line of puppets that would serve the interests of the Bush crime family. He closes by saying, aside from her unstinting support of the U.S. war on terror, i.e. a war on Islam and Muslims, she did not have a single word of criticism for the continued U.S. occupation of Afghanistan or Iraq, and was all for having regular consultative meetings with U.S. State Department officials to coordinate her return to power. Pakistan is undergoing its most difficult crisis yet, and without leadership and no cohesive indigenous-based ideology, the army is the only institution that can manage to stay in power. But a center that is based on such a high level of corruption and obedience to imperial masters will not be able to hold on for any length of time. And unless there emerges a real grassroots movement for social and economic justice with an Islamic identity that would appeal to the masses, it will be difficult, if not impossible, for this country to maintain its integrity. And by integrity, he means the opposite of disintegration. So a different point of view, and again, in these monstrous acts of intrigue that just float right past most of us, because frankly, it's none of our business. Do you realize that? What happens in the assassination of a political leader, or the hanging of another one, or the establishment of puppet governments, it is not our business. The only time it becomes our business is when we are told to donate a certain number of our brothers and husbands and fathers and now mothers, because the Bush crime family will take any kind of army it can put together, if it is people in their 50s or people in their late teens, if it's male or female. The only thing they won't do is take queers. Everybody else, we want your guts and your blood and your arms and your limbs and your legs, and screw you when we're finished with you. Other than contributing our family members who are misled into believing they're defending the United States when they are doing no such thing, who are brainwashed into believing that they are shoring up freedom and democracy halfway around the world in some goddamn territory that is tribal, that has been for 1,500 years and will be 1,500 years from now if left to its own devices. Aside from that kind of brainwashing, the only thing you and I are supposed to know about this is what these bastards tell us. The rest of it, we are supposed to let it go. These are shades, shadows, smoke. It means nothing. It means nothing. So the whole Benazir Bhutto assassination, murder, whatever you want to call it. And let's not kid ourselves about Musharraf. This guy is one of the sorts of Islamists that we have locked up in Guantanamo. He is a product of the jihad mentality. He works with the Bush crime family for the same basic reason that bin Laden worked with the Reagan crime family. Because it is convenient now. So this is where we are. All of this stuff, all of this madness, and because Benazir Bhutto lets slip something she knows, and that is that bin Laden is dead and has been dead for probably 5 years, all of a sudden her assassination becomes absolutely necessary. By somebody. By who? By whom? Who do you think is responsible for this? And no matter who you say, no matter who I say, you know what? The odds are we're wrong. She named, I think, four organizations who would like to offer. The one she left out, of course, was the United States CIA. Or the British MI6. She left those out. But the other ones, all of the Islamic groups that she named, were out to get her. So here we are. It's utter madness. And you know the extent to which we should pay any attention to this, where it concerns our having an effect on the ultimate outcome? Zero. Zip. Nada. Nothing. Nothing. What are we going to do? Write our members of Congress? Right. And ask them what? Impeach Bush? That's what we should be focused on. What are we going to ask for? They've already got the single bullet theory over there, don't they? Oh, yeah, she was shot with three bullets. No, she wasn't. There were no gunshot wounds. We're the doctors at Parkland. Oh, no, it's not Parkland. What's the name of the hospital there? There were no bullet holes. No, there was one, but it was an entry. No, it was an exit wound. Wait a second. She's already buried. Islamic custom. Get him in the ground quick. No autopsy. Nothing. Seal it. Sign it. Deliver it. Over. Done. Let's move on with the rioting and the death and the destruction here in the Islamic Republic of Pakistan. Let's continue this mad dance. Okay? Let's move on. Let's move on. One dead. Several more to come. The ultimate outcome. Musharraf. Yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Which means Bush. Yesterday, today, and, well, I guess tomorrow to be Clinton, won't it? Welcome back. It's about 6 past the hour. Very quickly here, because I want to go to your calls. Rawstory.com, Nick Giuliano has filed this. Apparently, the police who were supposed to be protecting Benazir Bhutto, they abandoned their security post shortly before she was assassinated yesterday. That's according to a journalist present at the time. Unanswerable questions remain, Nick writes, about the cause of her death because an autopsy was never performed. Now, listen to this. Pakistan's interior minister said today that Bhutto was not killed by gunshots, has been widely reported. And doctors at Rawalpindi General Hospital, where she died, say there were no bullet marks on the former prime minister's body, according to India's IBMLive.com. Furthermore, according to the news agency, no formal autopsy before she was buried. CNN is now reporting that it wasn't gunshots or shrapnel that killed Bhutto, but that she died from hitting the sunroof of the car she was riding in. The network, CNN, said sources in Pakistan's interior ministry said nothing entered her skull. No bullets or shrapnel. Earlier today, interior minister, and the interior minister of countries like Pakistan are the ones that determine who's going to be disappeared, who's going to be pushed out of an airplane at 10,000 feet with no parachute, who's going to be murdered, decapitated, and tortured. So this guy, Hamid Nawaz, told a Pakistani news channel, quote, "The report says she had head injuries, and the x-ray doesn't show any bullet in the head. So it was probably the shrapnel or the thing that had struck her in the head. That damaged her brain, causing it to ooze, and her death. There's no wound other than that." Now, Farzana Raha of Bhutto's Pakistan People's Party said the government's explanation is a pack of lies, and she offered another explanation. It was a sniper shooting, she said. Also accusing the government of a total security lapse. Dr. Musaddiq Khan of Rawalpindi General Hospital, who treated Bhutto before she was declared dead, said she had a big wound on the side of her head. That usually occurs when something big with a lot of speed hits that area. Oops, wait a second, Doc. You're not on the right page. There was no bullet marks. Doctors at your own hospital said there were no bullet marks. She hit her head. What the hell's wrong with you people? There were no gunshot wounds to her neck either, even though yesterday the first report from the Interior Ministry, the Torture Ministry, said, oh, there are holes in her neck. No, no holes in her neck. They're in her head. No, no holes in her head. She did not fall. She was not shot. There was no bomb. It was nothing. Go back to sleep. What is the hell wrong with you? Oh, my God. It's insane. Absolutely insane. This is another example of the Bush crime family's ineptitude. They were unable to force the Pakistanis and the CIA and the ISI and MI6 and everybody to get their stories coordinated. Now, if this would have been somebody, George Herbert Walker Bush or Ronald Reagan's gang or Bill Clinton's gang, they would have had the story down perfectly prior to her assassination so that this nonsense would not be happening. Look how smoothly it went with Kennedy 40-some years ago. The president's daddy was shot by a guy named Lee Harvey Oswald, who got off three shots within 6.4 seconds, and one of those shots was a magic bullet. Don't question, accept. But these clowns can't even assassinate a candidate, much less a president, without screwing everything. So you've got five stories out here now, right? It was shrapnel. No. It was a sniper. No. It was somebody who shot her in the head. No. It was somebody who shot her in the neck. No. She fell and bumped her head and cracked open her skull and the brain oozed out. Oh, okay. Let's go with that one. Son of a bitch. And we have to sit here all day, 2 days, listening to these insane people on U.S. television networks repeating this garbage, vomiting up this crap that's being fed to the world audience who cares about this from ISI, from MI6, from CIA. We sit here and we go, oh, is that what happened? Well, wait a minute. I thought she died of a gunshot wound. Well, no. It wasn't a gunshot wound. What was it? Shrapnel. No, it wasn't shrapnel. She fell and banged her head. No, she choked on a chicken bone. No, it's not that. What, a dog bit her. No, it was a lion attack. Or, no, it was a tiger attack. What the hell's wrong with you? I thought that was at the San Francisco Zoo. Well, that shows what you know. Don't you watch Fox News like the rest of us? But you know what? Only to the extent that this may tear Pakistan to shreds. I don't think there's any worry that the nuclear weapons that country has are going to fall into the hands of Islamic radicals. For Christ's sake, they're already in the hands of Islamic radicals. What do you think Musharraf is? A Democrat? Well, we can't let, oh my God. You see, that's the story, isn't it? Huh? That's why we send billions of dollars to another corrupt son of a bitch that the Bush crime family wallows around in the slime with. Well, Musharraf is, let me see, what is he? Oh, yeah, he's stopping Pakistan's nuclear arsenal from falling into the hands of, Bin Laden. That's the ticket. Yes, him. Musharraf would probably make a living Bin Laden look like a liberal Democrat. Musharraf is a military dictator who seized power, who is a product of madrasas, who is an Islamic jihadist, and he is simply waiting for the right moment to do what? Well, slam a few nukes into Calcutta, maybe? Oh, I know! Attack the damn Jews over in Israel! That's what he'll do! No. Not true, Malloy. Musharraf may be a militant dictator, murderous son of a bitch, but he's our militant dictator, murderous son of a bitch, just like Saddam was, just like Marcos was, just like Noriega was, just like Diem was, just like on and on and on was. And as far as Bhutto, if you believe people who know more about the intrigues and politics in that sad country than you and I do, Bhutto was the designated hitter. She was the person that was to come on because, you see, Musharraf had gotten too hot. All of a sudden, world press is paying too much attention to him. The thing about dictators that we back, they've got to keep a low profile. Here's a billion. Here's another billion. For Christ's sake, sit down and shut up or you're going to blow the whole thing. And then we have to bring in someone to replace you. And Musharraf didn't sit down and shut up quick enough. Take off your uniform. Go to hell. Take it off. For God's sake, take it off. Over and over. Remember that? Remember that? What was it? 2 weeks ago? 3 weeks ago? 4 weeks ago? Every time one of these State Department or White House thugs opened their mouth, it was the same line. Well, we would like Musharraf to take off his uniform. Take off his uniform. Take off his uniform. But Musharraf got just a tad too independent and had to be slapped down. And so Condoleezza Shoe Lady decides, oh, I know. Let's bring in Benazir Bhutto as the next sacrificial lamb. We'll put her in there. She'll do anything we tell her, especially if we get all the charges of corruption and fraud against her and the warrants dropped, removed, released, thrown away. So here you and I are, and what difference does any of this make? I'll tell you, the only time it will make a difference is if the Pakistan option resulting in global thermonuclear war occurs. Then, all of it will have made a difference.
The president will also call on President Musharraf to take off the uniform.
The United States wants you to have the elections that's scheduled and take your uniform off.
Will take off his uniform.
Yes, yes, yes. You can leave your hat on.
And you need to take off your uniform.
You can leave your hat on.
Take off the uniform.
You can leave your hat on.
My message was very, very plain.
He will take off his uniform.
Take off your uniform.
Take off the uniform.
Take your uniform off.
Take off his uniform.
You need to take off your uniform. Dreamer. Man had an idea. He didn't like the way the cotton shirts that he wore absorbed, his bodily fluids when he exercised, so he came up with a better product. It was so wonderful to sit with dreamers.
Okay. This is the last one. Who sent this to me? Oh, my God. It's Malachi in Saskatoon in Canada sent this to me. You got to hear this. This is from the Daily Mail of the UK. The the headline is, Pope's exorcist squads will wage war on Satan. Oh, God. Here's what it says. The Pope has ordered his bishops to set up exorcism squads to tackle the rise of Satanism. Vatican chiefs are concerned at what they see as an increased interest in the occult. They have introduced courses for priests to combat what they call the most extreme form of godlessness. Each bishop is to be told to have in his diocese a number of priests trained to fight demonic possession. This initiative was revealed by Father Gabriel Amorth, the Vatican exorcist-in-chief, quote-quote, to the online Catholic news service Petrus. Father Gabriel said, quote, thanks be to God, we have a pope who has decided to fight the devil head-on. Too many bishops are not taking this seriously and are not delegating their priests in the fight against the devil. You have to hunt high and low for a properly trained exorcist. Thankfully, Benedict the 16th believes in the existence of danger and danger of evil, going back to the time he was in charge of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. End quote. Now, that of course, is the oldest Vatican department and was headed by Benedict from 1982 when he was Cardinal Ratzinger. This is after he dropped his Nazi Party affiliation until he became Pope a couple of years ago. Father Amorth said that during his time at the department, Benedict had not lost the chance to warn humanity of the risk from the devil. He said the Pope wants to restore a prayer seen as protection against evil that was traditionally recited at the end of Catholic Masses. The prayer to St. Michael the Archangel was dropped in the 1960s by Pope John the 23rd. Father Amorth said the prayer, quote, "the prayer is useful not only for priests, but also for lay people in helping to fight demons." End quote. No, this is not from The Onion. This is from dailymail.co.uk. It's from the newspaper, The Daily Mail. Father Paolo Scarafoni, who lectures on the Vatican's exorcism course, said interest in Satanism and the occult has grown as people lost faith with the church. If I might editorialize, it wasn't necessarily losing faith with the church. It was losing faith with the fact that you have a nest of pedophiles that rape children around the globe, you dumbass. That's where people lost faith. Father Paolo added, quote, "people suffer and think that turning to the devil can help solve their problems. We are being bombarded by requests for exorcisms," end quote. Oh my God. And here it comes. The Vatican is particularly concerned that young people are being exposed to the influence of satanic sects through rock music and the internet. Rock music? No, that was that. Kathy, that was 30 years ago. Now it's rap music. Rock music? Who in the hell does rock anymore?
Rap, rock, what's the difference? I wonder if they could start with the White House.
In theory, under the Catholic Church's Canon Law 1172, all priests can perform exorcisms, but in reality, only a select few are assigned the task. Under the law, practitioners must have, quote, piety, knowledge, prudence, and integrity of life, end quote. The rite of exorcism involves a series of gestures and prayers to invoke the power of God and stop the demon influencing its victim. Which ties in neatly to Carl Sagan's last book, what was it, The Demon-Haunted World? So there you go. The Catholic Church now wants every diocese to have its own squad of exorcists. I don't believe this is happening. I don't believe this is happening. Well, believe it, Malloy, because it is. All right, we got to do a break. When we come back, we're going to start with Pam in Seattle. And then go to Jeff in Phoenix, and then Mark in San Francisco, and Marie in Tempe, and Tim in San Francisco. And then we will have some open lines, and you can jump in, and we will do lots and lots of your calls. All right? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.
I got my plastic Jesus riding on the dashboard on my car. Through my trials and tribulations and my travels through the nations, with my plastic Jesus I'll go far. Riding down the...
Gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Just to stay alive, 'cause the heat is on.
25 past the hour. Boy, I mentioned Pam in... where is she calling from? And her phone went dead. This is from Lance in Manhattan, Illinois, not New York. He writes, Mike, I've been watching the Ministry of Truth, I mean Fox, and I'm ashamed and I'm alarmed that there has not been an immediate recall in the auto industry. Mike, did you know there's a car sunroof out there that if bumped by a human head will suck out the brains of the bumpy, explode and take out up to 20 people? Sounds like a Pinto, but I don't believe Pintos had sunroofs. Is there a story in Consumer Reports about this brain-sucking, exploding sunroof? And thank the Lord Jesus Christ and the Ministry of Truth, I mean Fox News, for keeping us all so well informed. Yeah, we have Kennedy and the magic bullet, the single bullet theory, and now we have Bhutto and the exploding... Never mind. All right, let's do some phone calls here, starting with Jeff in Phoenix, listening on the Internet. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Good. All right. And listen, there was a reporter there at the time when this attack took place. He showed, he had a photograph of her when she was in the car in the sunroof, and then he showed a Glock 9mm handgun laying on the ground. Mm-hmm. According to the report, he said that she was hit one time in the back of her neck. They had already said that it was an explosion that killed her, but that her spinal cord was severed.
No, you must have been on drugs when you saw that. There was no picture of a Glock 9. Come on.
No, there was. The day when it
Come on, Jeff.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's for real. Yeah, they did. They showed Glock 9mm lay on the ground.
Yeah.
All right? But now, you know, there was a... You was reading an email with someone who said it may have been some sort of deal made with Sharf. But mm-hmm. I think that the reason that she, you know, I mean, it was in November 6th when she made that statement about the three people who she think was after her, and she had to mention one of them was the person who murdered Osama bin Laden.
Right.
But I think that the reason she had to go, because this media never covered that, is because she had over 60% of the population behind her. So it's pretty sure she would have won the election. Mm-hmm. And she probably would have mentioned again and again that Osama bin Laden was dead. And I think the reason that he doesn't appear on the FBI Most Wanted list is because our government has already paid the reward money to this individual that she has mentioned. And this individual is probably financing terrorism against our troops in the Middle East. So I think when Condoleezza Rice went over there, it was to seal the deal. And that's why she is no longer here. God rest her soul.
Oh, now see, you're tripping. You're absolutely tripping. And that's what's happened to me all day today. Until you know what I finally realized, Jeff, none of it makes any difference, because people like you and I will never, ever, ever know what really happened. But as far as you see in that Glock 9 on the ground, forget about it, partner. There was no Glock 9. She was killed by an exploding sunroof that knocked her brains out. What?
And that's why there's a bill in Congress right now in which they use language declaring the internet as a tool of terrorism. Why? Because we get information from it. That picture was on all over the internet of that Glock laying on the ground. So the federal government, they have a bill, I think it's called 99A, in which they declare the internet a tool of terrorism. And there's a little fine paragraph in there that makes it illegal,
Jeff,
to own a gun in this country if it passes. So far, 406-6.
Jeff, you need to get a Glock 9, all right?
Okay.
Get one with the big clip. I'm not talking about that little...
The banana clip, right?
I'm not talking about that little candy-ass 9 shot. I'm talking about the big clip. Just get your hands on one, okay?
Yeah.
All right, Jeff. Thanks for checking in, Jeff. Yeah, and then there was that video. Didn't you all see the... that fuzzy kind of videotape? There was all sorts of, what do they call it on CNN now? Eye videos or something, eye films, eye submissions. You know, people with their cell phone cameras and their little digital cameras. And remember the one, I don't know, it came out sometime yesterday, or maybe it was early this morning, that showed the gun in somebody's hand, and the person. The person on whatever network it was that was explaining the video said, look, you can tell it's being shot three times. You see the kick of the shell exiting the gun. Or not the shell, but the bullet exiting the gun. Jeff, that wasn't a gun on the ground. It was a piece of a car door handle. That's all. Go back to sleep, man. Don't stir anything up. Come on. Don't be tripping like that. There's nothing to see. Nothing to see. Let's all take another look at the Zapruder film from Dealey Plaza, November 22nd, 1963. Let's take a look at that again, right? I know. I got a better idea. Let's talk about the Twin Towers of World Trade Center falling just so perfectly into their own footprint. Just beep, crunch. Tim is calling from San Francisco, listening on the internet. Hey, Tim.
How's my bro?
I'm here.
All right. Hey, long time no talk. Okay.
I hear you. Yeah. I hear you.
Hey, congratulations on finding that, madam. You are an incredible, incredible human being, Mrs. Kathy.
Yeah, Kathy's good.
Yeah, she's incredible. Way to go. But, yeah, that's great for you and for Nova M, too, because, like, you guys are the only ones that are really hauling the truth out. The rest of them, what can I say? But you can. I wrote a piece about that, too. If you go to 11thday.org, that's where I got my writings under Zeitgeist. You'll catch that. But it has nothing to do with you guys, though, okay?
Okay.
Okay, bro. But I just want you to know I found something you'll find very interesting, Mike. Yesterday I talked a little bit about part of it, but today I found out more. It has to do in part with Benazir Bhutto and also with the word Zeitgeist. Now, if you go to rncnyc2004.blogspot.com, you'll find the Republican National Convention blog, New York City, 2004. Now, on the left-hand side, there's a picture of Ms. Bhutto. If you click that on the biography, you go just about a third of the way down on the page. First of all, on the far right, you will see things like John McCain, Zeitgeist, Mike Huckabee, Zeitgeist. That they're saying they want you to know the spirit of Tom Tancredo or Rudy Giuliani. Do you really want to know the spirit of these people? But as far as Ms. Bhutto is concerned, just below that part, it says charges of corruption. Some extremely interesting information on the corruption that was supposedly connected to her and her family.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, when you were saying that this really means nothing, you are absolutely right, Mike. I mean, you assessed that absolutely perfectly. It's just what it is, man. It means nothing, because this lady, according to what I'm seeing here, was no better than the man she would be replacing.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right, man. Good job, man.
Well, it's not my work, Tim. It was, found somebody sent it to me, emailed it to me. And I now, this blogger apparently has some pretty intense insights into what's going on in, as Bush would say, that part of the world. All we did was get it out. But, hey, Tim, thanks, man. I got to move on. I appreciate you checking in. Mark is calling from San Francisco, listening on the Internet. Hey, Mark.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Greetings to you and Molly and Kathy.
Well, thank you.
Yes. I wanted to say basically that I really appreciate that you have brought up the subject that Bhutto really wasn't quite the saint that she is being portrayed as.
Sure.
This is very important. And in fact, even one of our favorites, Rachel Maddow,
mm-hmm.
who I cannot say anything bad about hardly.
Right.
She has one of the keenest analytical political people and very knowledgeable that we know.
She's very good. Excellent.
Absolutely. But today and yesterday, she really did bring up people, and her stance was what a great thing she was for democracy. So I think, well, that she was a little off on that.
Well, you have to dig a little bit, and I don't know how deeply you can dig. I don't know what Rachel's production staff, what it consists of. I don't know how much time she devotes to digging this stuff out. Hey, stay. Who are we talking to? Who we got here? Mark, stay there, Mark. Stay there. I got to do a break, and we'll finish this up when we come back. This is Nova M Radio.
Sometimes I'm happy, you know, but wars are not a time of joy. These aren't joyous times.
Ten before the hour, we're talking with Mark in San Francisco. All right, back to you, Mark. Where were we?
Yes. Basically, what I wanted to say is that I'm very appreciative that you brought out the fact that Obuto actually has these very strong connections with the more feudalistic landlord property people in Pakistan. And that's not been heard that much. Now, Rachel, maybe in the next few days we'll bring that up. I have a lot of faith in her. You know, I mean, criticism is fair even with the people that we think the most of. And that needs to be brought out. And the fact that, yes, she would work very well with the powers that be in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is, it's a...
Well, remember, from everything that I can gather, Mark, it wasn't her idea. It wasn't Bhutto's idea to go back. I mean, maybe it was floating around in her head, but remember, her father was hanged. After he was overthrown, she had two brothers murdered, a sister, three or four of her family members have been murdered because of their political involvement. It was Condoleezza Rice who presented, the way I'm getting the story, presented her with the idea that the Bush crime family would back her. And it's also my understanding that the offer was made to Blackwater to provide protection for Benazir Bhutto when she got there, and Blackwater turned it down, I think for obvious reasons. They are just corrupt to the absolute heart and soul of their organization, and there probably wasn't enough money involved or not as many chances to kill innocent beat down civilians. You know, Pakistan is full of professionals. It's not like Iraq. Iraq has become a failed state, and Blackwater can go there and kill as many people as they want to, and nobody, they can't be charged with any crimes, whereas if they were in Pakistan, they could be charged with crimes. So Blackwater said no. That left Benazir Bhutto with the offer from Rice, Cheney, Bush, and no protection, none whatsoever. So the whole thing just stinks to high heaven. It's just absolute poison. Maybe the idea from the Bush crime family was to sacrifice Bhutto, to throw the country, to throw Pakistan into absolute turmoil so that the United States military can move into yet a fourth country.
I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, well
I don't think
what did I hear last night?
They want that because with Musharraf and even possibly with Bhutto, right, they can still do what they want to do. I don't think there was that much difference as far as the United States powers that be would think of it
Well, I'll tell you what to watch for over the next couple of weeks and maybe the next few days is an increase in U.S. military presence in Pakistan. Now, I had something on the air last night. We already have special forces there, which I was totally unaware of. Mm-hmm. And they're not there to go out into the Badlands and try to find this dead son of a bitch who allegedly blew up the...
Why would they be there then?
Well, they're there to protect the nuclear weaponry. That's why.
From what I gather, the military dictatorship and the military there in Pakistan is quite capable of protecting it. There might be a couple here and there.
I think they're quite capable of using it because I get too many reports from too many sources. I'm not talking about 20 reports. I'm talking about maybe 3 or 4 from reliable, what I consider to be reliable news sources in that part of the world, in the Indian subcontinent, from the Pakistan news agencies, that Musharraf and his gang his inner circle, and which means the highest ranking members of the ISI, their security forces and the military, are Islamic fundamentalists. They are the very people that allegedly we're fighting where are we fighting them? Christ, I don't know. Afghanistan, Iraq. I have no idea anymore. I'm totally, totally lost. and so are you, Mark. And so is everybody else. We can sit here all night and speculate on this stuff. And fine, it staves off Alzheimer's from attacking us because we're playing mind games. We're keeping the synapses firing, right? But the truth of all this is as elusive, and I mentioned the other night, as a chunk of mercury, a little bubble of mercury, the kind we used to play with when we were kids. The truth of all of this is just elusive, not allusive, but elusive. You can't pin it down. But one of the thoughts I had today was that Bhutto is nothing more than a sacrificial lamb deliberately sent there to be murdered. I mean, who had any doubt? Did you? Did anybody have any doubt that the woman was going to be assassinated, especially after what happened shortly after she got there when they made the first attempt? Please! Of course she was going to be murdered. Hello? Dawn follows dusk. But maybe the Bush crime family wanted that. I don't know. I'm saying maybe. She had enough enemies. She was not a fundamentalist Muslim. She was not willing to cover herself in a burqa. She wasn't willing to hobble along the street as if she was a ninth-class citizen. Regardless of what crimes she may or may not have been involved in, fraud, graft, corruption, she was still an emancipated woman and let the world know it. She was the first, and as far as I know, the only female head of an Islamic country. And these fundamentalist rat bastards hate that, just like the fundamentalist rat bastards in this country hate it. That's one of the reasons they don't want Hillary Clinton. She's a woman! We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.
Like a bird on a horn,
Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Once again, program note, we will be off all of next week and the following Monday. The program this Monday and Tuesday will be encore presentations of the Molloy Show, and then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and next Monday will be Johnny Wendell sitting in for us. He's with KTLK in Los Angeles, and we'll be back live Tuesday, January 8th. Back to your phone calls. Pam is calling from Seattle. Pam, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, Pam.
Yeah. I wanted to just respond to a couple of points that you just made and then kind of say something about a larger issue.
Sure.
Well, first of all, I think, you know, you were talking about the truth and what is the truth. And, of course, we can't know that. But I think, you know, I was thinking, well, maybe it's constantly evolving and changing with this whole regime thing. I mean, they're so good at taking whatever the situation is and using it to their advantage. So, I mean, they could have started out with one thing and then, you know, ended up with something else equally to their advantage. We just don't. I mean, you know, but they're very good at doing that. And I also wanted to. I was thinking myself about the chaos and all that that would be created because of her death. When you were talking about sending her in as the sacrificial lamb, because I just think that's exactly what they thrive on, these monsters. And speaking of Bushko,
sure.
And that this would be their perfect scenario to go in and, like you said, take over another country. Iran isn't working out so well. People have a clue about that now. So, oh, well, let's just move on to the next. And this looks like as likely a possibility as anything else. So maybe she didn't know. Maybe she thought that they had her back and that they had a deal. And maybe she actually felt that she was safe. I mean, she put herself out there so obviously.
Oh, my God. I wouldn't go into a crowd with that little bit of protection that she had. It's just astonishing. And you're right. The Bush crime family, while they have the ability to take advantage of chaos, because they're demons of a sort, they have they can take advantage of chaos. As far as what happened here, remember, it was just a few weeks ago, we talked about it on this program, Negroponte. John Negroponte went to Pakistan.
Yes, that was the,
right, to do what?
Well,
to do what?
Exactly, because that was my first thought. I have been saving articles about that. And my first thought was, I know it's Negroponte because we sent him in there, and I think that by the very fact that who we sent was a message to Musharraf that, okay, we're going to look the other way, we're going to, you know, just keep doing what you're doing. This is who we're sending to connect with you.
Right, that's what Negroponte does.
Yeah.
That's what he's done since going back to Vietnam.
Yeah.
I can't think of any assassination or death squad or torture operation that the United States has been involved in, and there have been many, that didn't have Negroponte's fingerprints all over them over the past almost 4 decades. This guy, John Negroponte, is the wet man. He's the man who deals in the blood.
Yeah.
This guy defines evil, and you can see it. All you have to do is look at him.
I know.
Oh, my God.
I know. He freaks me out. And when I heard that they had sent him, my heart just went, I mean, I just went cold. I felt, oh, no. Oh, God, I know something horrible is going to happen. And it did.
And bingo.
I mean, I just knew it. And I feel like she probably bought into what they said. That's why she was so, I mean, I don't know this, but it's just a thought that she, you know, thought that, okay, my butt's covered, so now I'll go out there and willingly do whatever, and then she got it, you know,
right,
because of what you said, you know. I mean, they had to get rid of her because what did she say? She said Osama had been killed by, you know, somebody, And which brings me to my larger point, which is that the reason I think it's important, really, to talk about this is, I mean, it's nice, like you said, to keep from Alzheimer's, but is that we raise awareness of what's going on. I mean, it's not...
At least raise questions.
Yeah, raise questions. And raise awareness that the Bush Co. is doing yet another thing while we're not looking, or while most of America isn't looking. Because, like, for instance, last night when you read that on the air about what she'd said about Osama, and then this morning Tom Hartman picked it up on his program and started talking about it and said that he'd heard it from your program, and so pretty soon other people are going to pick it up, you know? I mean, it's just like it goes slowly, but, I mean, just bringing it up and making sure that there's somebody that says something about it and you know, because I think that's a key thing, because obviously Bush wouldn't want us to know that. I mean, my God, that's the boogeyman that he always raises, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a perfect reason to kill her, too.
Yeah, and to keep raising the issue, it wasn't David Frost or David Letterman who sat there and said, identified the guy who murdered, that was her term, not killed, not destroyed, but murdered Osama bin Laden. She was very clear in her language. She did not run through it. You know, I've got people today emailing me saying, well, why didn't David Frost say anything? David Frost is damn near 80 years old. He's a doddering old man. David Frost was on television doing interview shows when I was a kid, for God's sake. So whether or not, you know, David Frost gets interested in his questions, like so many interviewers, they will focus on their question. They will ask a question. They can't wait for the subject. Wolf Blitzer defines
Wolf
this.
Blitzer. Oh.
Can't wait for the subject to answer the question so they can ask the next one.
Right.
They don't ask follow up. They don't pay attention to what the answer is. They just want to get the question out.
Yeah.
And as far as David Frost is concerned, you know, I have nothing but great respect for age, but there comes a point where if you are so doddering and half senile that somebody says, oh, by the way, Osama bin Laden was murdered 5 years ago, you don't just sit there and let it blow by. What you do is say, Miss Bhutto, I think you misspoke. Did you mean to say that Osama bin Laden had been murdered? Now, that's the least you can do.
God, what an opening. I mean,
if you're paying attention to your own interview.
Maybe your device.
is what?
His
hearing aid.
His hearing aid.
Well, then he should not be conducting interviews that may have explosive comments.
No kidding.
So anyway, all right. Well, listen, Pam. Thanks for checking in. I appreciate it. Take care.
Well, there's another option too. Maybe he heard her perfectly and just wanted to protect her, didn't want to go there, because apparently, from what I read on some message boards today, the BBC did pick up on the story, and it did make some of the London papers. It did make some that what she said about Osama bin Laden, and everyone was just like,
Well, I got an email from Mayflower Mike, who is in Europe today, and he said, you know, regarding your piece of tape last night, the interview with David Frost, people over here already knew about it. They know about it.
There for him to ask her about it, because it was like, Osama bin Laden murdered, You know, maybe there was nothing controversial about it to him.
I can't stand it. Stick around. More of your phone calls when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Please don't let me be misunderstood. You know, sometimes I'm so carefree with a joyless heart, and sometimes again it seems all I have is worth. Then you finally see my other side.
Be misunderstood.
The Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
21 past the hour. By the way, did you know that Bush today used his pocket veto to reject, to veto the defense bill that the Democrats in Congress just gave him because this snotty little bastard dislikes a provision that would expose the Iraqi government to expensive lawsuits seeking damages from the Saddam Hussein era. Can you believe this? In the first place, there is no Iraqi government. What he means is oil revenues would be subject to attachment to settle civil suits. This is incredible. In a statement, Bush said the legislation handed him everything in the damn thing that he wanted would, his words, imperil billions of dollars of Iraq assets at a crucial juncture in that nation's reconstruction efforts, end quote. Can you imagine? Well, of course you can. If the Democrats would have refused to have allowed the bill to pass to begin with, the screaming about they're abandoning the troops, they're committing treason, and yet Bush can sit there like a petulant, breath-holding three-year-old and say, well, I'm not going to sign it. I'm going to veto it because it leaves the Iraqi government, you know, Iraqi government, exposed to lawsuits. That's what Dick Cheney tells me. And Dick Cheney has lots of plans for, his over there in that place. Son of a bitch. So there is no Iraq war funding thanks to George Walker Bush. Which is a good thing, but he didn't intend it that way, you see. Back to your phone calls. Marie is calling from Tempe, Arizona, listening on KPHX. Hey, Marie.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Oh, doing good. Doing good. I was calling because I wanted to say that we're having a Fiesta Bowl parade tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
There's
going
to be like 400,000 people there.
Right.
And I'm hoping that people come out with their signs and even have taped her saying that Bin Laden is dead. And just, you know, I hear you. I don't know if it's going to do any good, mm-hmm. but... The alternative is not good.
All right. Now, when you say 400,000 people, what do you mean? In Phoenix?
Along
a parade route for the Fiesta Bowl?
Yeah, they're having a Fiesta Bowl parade.
Right. I'm familiar with that. What do you think might occur? Are you thinking?
Well, it's just that we're planning on having signs up and passing out flyers.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm just... given some suggestions to other people out there that the only way we're going to get this country back is to get everybody awake. Mm-hmm. And the more people that listen to your show, Nova M Radio, getting the truth, we can change things. And I went to the Democratic Party, and I'm not thrilled with them. In fact, I'm actually thinking about supporting Ron Paul. And the reason I am is because I've seen Freedom to Fascism. And
well,
about the IRS and Reserve.
If you're going to support Ron Paul, which I strongly recommend against, at least, I mean, it's your vote. Go to votesmart.org. And take a look at his record. I know he advertises on this network, this station.
I've seen a lot of things,
right.
And I do like it. I think what.
Well, are you familiar with his voting record? Do you know how he stands on the issues? The place to go to, seriously, Marie, it's vote-smart.org.
Well, I did look at it.
And you're okay with him?
Well, everybody's talking about the health issue. I think that. Just looking at it, you could come to conclusions that he might be for do. And I, as I understand from what I've talked to the supporters, is that he wants to put the power back into the state. And so,
well, do you understand?
He's a constitutionalist.
But do you understand what that means? Putting the power back in the states, that means no Food and Drug Administration. It means no EPA. It means no regulatory agencies whatsoever. It means if somebody, first of all, he is very much against a woman having the privacy to make her own decision about an abortion. I don't know where you stand on abortion. It really doesn't matter. But when somebody believes, as Ron Paul does, in small government, and yet he also feels that the federal government has the power to tell women what they can and can't do with their own bodies, that to me is bogus. I don't like this guy, Marie. I think he's a fraud, a sneak, and a snake. Now, I know a lot of people support him, but I think they're supporting him for all the wrong reasons. I don't like him. All I'm saying is, and what I like or don't like is immaterial to how someone votes. You need to check out his voting record. I'm not talking about listening to his supporters. I'm talking about going to vote-smart.org and take a look at what he has done as a member of Congress.
I base a lot of my foreign policy decisions on some things that I think are true. One, I believe there's an Almighty.
It's about 25 before the hour. Sanchez is calling from Montebello, California. Sanchez, welcome to the program.
Muy buenas noches, señor Malloy.
Back at you.
And also... from everybody here inside the NovaM chat room, we all want to wish you the happiest and the best New Year 2008 and a big hug.
Well, thank you so much. That's very kind. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So
and back at you again.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And back over to the members in the chat room right now. I'm looking at all the happy faces coming up on the screen here. So.
All right.
First of all, I want to ask this question. You've already partially... elaborated on it, but I wanted to get to my year-in-review question, too. But just very briefly, why hasn't the American media picked up on Bhutto's revelation about the murder of bin Laden? Why? I know you already talked about the BBC, but how come this hasn't come out, and how can we get that word out? That would be my question.
Well, the word is not going to be forced into mainstream media in this country. They ignore this kind of stuff because it's not in the playbook. It's not what they're supposed to be doing. Media in this country, television primarily, is complicit with the Bush crime family in keeping America completely on edge, completely willing to accept corporatism or fascism, because they are, that is corporate America. I don't care how smiley face some of these newscasters appear to be, or how concerned they appear to be about the well-being of America. They don't give a damn about the well-being of America. They give a damn about the well-being of their job.
That's about it.
And if their job says get out here and lie to these dumb bastards in America, get out here and tell them stuff that is totally superfluous to their very survival, do it. They will do it. So corporate media couldn't care less about something that Benazir Bhutto said 7 weeks ago about the man who murdered bin Laden. They don't care. They're waiting for the next phony-ass CIA tape of bin Laden to surface so they can slam it onto their 7 o'clock newscast and scare the living bejesus out of all the drones sitting in front of their televisions in middle America. That's what they're about. So, no, don't ever expect mainstream media. You will never hear Brian Williams talk about the interview that David Frost had had with Benazir Bhutto. It will never happen. You'll never hear the Charlie Gibson on ABC ever even mentioning it. And Wolf Blitzer would rather rip his own guts out than bring up the story and show the tape. For Christ's sake, you can go anywhere on the internet now and find that audio video interview, and media won't touch it. So it will never happen. Never, 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 never.
Yep.
They have an interest in keeping all of us, running to the bathroom because we're scared crapless. That's what they're about. All they're about.
Yeah,
so forget it, Sanchez.
No, I know.
It's never going to happen.
Well, this is one of the talking points that I wanted to discuss here regarding. This is kind of a year in review with as much time as I have here to bring up some salient points as far as how weird this year went by, 2007. And I jotted down a few of my highlights here. One of them we just talked about was the biggest betrayal I felt was from the corporate media for the behavior concerning Bhutto and for everything else. I mean, there's so many points that I could bring up, but it's become so apparent that, yeah, they're part of the machine. So, you know, that they're the biggest betrayal. In my opinion, the biggest disappointment, and you touched on it with your opening comment.
Can I make a comment about that first one?
Yeah.
If mainstream media, especially television, were seriously concerned about the state of this country and what Bush has done,
mm-hmm.
they could bring this son of a bitch down in 1 week.
Oh, God, yes.
In 1 week, if that long.
Mm-hmm.
All they have to do is start telling the truth. All they have to do is call this lying bastard a lying bastard.
Mm-hmm.
The only person that comes close to it is Keith Olbermann.
Mm-hmm.
And they got him stuck on this tin horn MSNBC network that probably doesn't reach as many people as this program reaches.
Right.
So it's horrifying.
Yeah.
But the day that you will know that media in this country are interested in preserving the Constitution will be the day they decide to bring this bastard administration down.
Yeah.
And that won't happen.
No, it won't, because they'll also have to answer the question as to why they were asleep and complicit for so long. So they're just like everybody else. They're never going to admit guilt. So they're the biggest betrayers of the year 2007.
Oh, it's awful. It's like we've said so many times, they're the only industry, the only occupation that has constitutional protection.
Yeah.
And these filthy dogs have absolutely, absolutely abandoned their responsibility to the American people.
I have a few other little highlights here if we've got time for them.
Run them through them real quick.
Real quick, the biggest disappointment is the members of the Democratic Congress, and that includes most of the Democratic mm-hmm. presidential candidates, because, you know, well, we talked about the Harlem Globetrotters, and the Democrats are the Washington Generals. They're currently the stooges that are always going to lose in the basketball game against the Harlem Globetrotters, and that includes impeachment. You know why? Because they're just holding on to the ball, waiting for the clock to run out.
Right.
But you know what? That ain't going to win the game.
No, it doesn't.
But the biggest person of the year, I felt, was Al Gore. It was all Al Gore. He won the awards. He brought the attention. He acted presidential. That is one. I mean, he's got his faults, but that he mm-hmm. was the man of the year as far as I was concerned.
Sure.
And the best reaffirming moment, just to show that there is still common sense within the government, even though there's still a lot of corruption, the biggest reaffirming moment was the release of the NIE report about Iran and their non-existent nuclear arms race.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of, at least for the moment, has shut down the march towards Iran. So, in a nutshell, that's pretty much my highlight.
Well, those are good high points, Sanchez. They are good, and thanks for sharing them with us. Take care, pal. I gotta move on here. Thanks a lot. Good stuff, Sanchez. Suzanne in L.A. Emails in. Good evening, Mike. I tuned you in half an hour ago, so I don't know if you mentioned the impeach action millions of people will hopefully see as they snuggle up and sip their hot chocolate to watch the Rose Bowl parade on New Year's Day. It will be interesting to see how the mainstream media reacts to this. Demonstrators will be right out in front of the Norton Simon Museum where cameras are focused. Well, this is a great idea, whether it's the Fiesta Bowl or the Rose Bowl or the Orange Bowl or any of these bowl games. And if it upsets, Joe and Jill Sixpack sitting at home on their ass waiting for the game to be over so they can switch to Fox News, screw them. I hope that I mean, where else are you going to get the cameras? The networks, the media, mainstream media in this country couldn't care less about anything except making you forget and selling advertising. That's all they care about. you know, go buy the product. We don't even care if you buy the products. Is their message just get the ad agencies to purchase the time? You know, what does it say about a network that in the middle of the greatest crisis facing the human race, possibly the whole planet, these sons of bitches still run Hummer commercials? I mean, what? My God! So to hell with them. I would love to see it. Suzanne, I hope it happens. I hope that people sitting at home on New Year's Day, and I'll be one of them, watching some of these games, I hope what we see is just absolute chaos from people demanding the impeachment of these bastards. But you know what? I don't put a lot of stock in that happening, because this country, for the most part, is totally anesthetized. We are in a coma. It doesn't make any difference. Nothing makes any difference. These sons of bitches in the Bush crime family can do whatever they want to do. The only time that there might be a little action is when it becomes clear that we're about to drop nuclear weapons on another country like Iran. Then even some of these snarky, filthy right-wingers will say, well, wait a minute, maybe we better not do that, you know, because the radioactive cloud might hurt where I vacation. So, no. No, whatever it takes. Oh, God. All right, so it's becoming very clear to people who are regular listeners to this program that our taking next week off is absolutely imperative. Sorry, don't mean to go that wacky. Bruce is calling from California. Bruce, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, good evening.
Hi.
I wanted to comment on the Bhutto quote that you were playing last night. I was as floored as anybody else when I heard it. You know, I just couldn't believe it. And, by the way, apparently you have a lot more reach than you think. When I went to YouTube, there had been 23,000 hits, and so far there are over 100,000 hits.
Wow, that's cool.
And so, yeah, that was since 9 o'clock last night, my time here in California. The reason that I'm calling, however, is because there was an interview with Benazir Bhutto that was on CNN. Apparently, there's a transcript aired November 3rd, 2007, which is the day after the David Frost interview.
Can you hold that thought?
Sure.
Hold it right there, Bruce, because I got a break here. We'll come right back and pick it up there. Interview of Benazir Bhutto on CNN. I know which one he's referring to, but we'll let him say it. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
To the government, it is wheat, in the soldiers, in the war, don't know what he's fighting for. Hear the tanks are rolling on, to the bursting of the bombs, yeah. Brother, sister, getting killed, for that greenback dollar. Here's me, it's happening.
Ten before the hour, don't forget, next Monday and Tuesday will be encore presentations of The Malloy Show, and then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and the following Monday, Los Angeles KTLK superstar Johnny Wendell will sit in for me. I'll be back Tuesday the 8th. Program engineered by Billy Foster, who is also our technical director and also answered your calls tonight. Did he have time to go to the bathroom? I guess he didn't. Chris in Minnesota is our senior correspondent. Catherine Bay, our executive producer. We were talking with We were talking with, where are we? Bruce in California. Okay, go ahead, Bruce. The interview that she had the day after on CNN, the day after she had with Frost.
Right. In that interview, basically, she implies that bin Laden is alive.
Now, when you say implies, what
do you mean? Okay, well, for example, there was a question that says, so, Ms. Bhutto, I'm hearing you correctly saying that you almost indirectly blame Musharraf for helping produce these safe havens in Pakistan, where there is terrorist activity, perhaps in these safe havens, someone like Osama bin Laden, the most wanted terrorist in the world, might just be taking refuge. And then she answers, I wouldn't like to go so far as to blame Musharraf directly, but I certainly would say many people in his administration security apparatus responsible for internal security make me feel very uneasy. And she speaks about safe havens.
Okay, that sounds to me like a deliberate evasion of the way the statement, I don't think it was necessarily a question, was put to her. But that's just my interpretation. You know,
yeah, I know.
I don't know.
I know. That's what I mean, too. I don't know either. I mean, I'm just reading. I know what she said, and it just floored me when I heard it.
Right.
I mean, it just...
You know, I don't have any investment at all in what the late Benazir Bhutto said or didn't say to David Frost or to CNN. I really don't. It's astonishing to me to hear her make that statement on the Frost interview and not have any follow-up by anybody, anywhere, anytime, any place, in any media, anywhere on the globe.
I agree with that.
That's the part that blows me away.
What I
do believe is that the Bush crime family is involved up to its eyeballs in every single act like this one, like the assassination of Benazir Bhutto, either directly or indirectly. They are the ones who sent her there. You know, we cannot forget the fact that it was Condoleezza Rice acting on somebody's orders who suggested to Benazir Bhutto that now was the time for her to go to Pakistan and become, for the third time, the prime minister of that corruption-racked country. And it was also, one has to assume, that somewhere in the U.S. government a promise was made to her, we've got your back. Now, when she gets there and the explosion occurs, the car bomb goes off, and 120 people or whatever it was are slaughtered, and she manages to escape, at that point, oh my God, at that point, she was totally left on her own. Nobody provided security. Was there any doubt in your mind that she was going to be offed? It was just a matter of time.
No, it really wasn't. It was pretty obvious that it was going to happen, or certainly that the attempts were going to continue.
So as far as her statements or her answer to that question from the CNN person, sure, that can be interpreted by reasonable people to in a way that says, well, this is Benazir Bhutto kind of acknowledging that Osama bin Laden is still alive. But the greater issue to me, I think, is, you know, what are her thought processes when she's on Al Jazeera talking to David Frost or on CNN talking to America? I don't know what her thought processes were.
I agree with you.
So,
well, I mean, the statement itself, I mean, is just as clear as a bell. You know, there's no equivocation about what she said.
None.
And you know, I don't know how to interpret it either. It's just, but it's an astonishing, as you say, it's a totally astonishing remark.
Well, maybe sometime, Bruce, in a different lifetime, we'll get the answer. Thanks, pal. I got to leave it there. I appreciate it. Appreciate you checking in. Marge is calling from Indiana. Marge, oh my God, I've got a minute left.
Good evening. Well, I just wanted to make sure that you were aware of House Resolution 847.
I'm not.
Whereas Christmas is a holiday of great significance.
Oh, that one. Oh, yeah, that one. The Christian resolution.
Isn't that lovely?
Yeah, we...
Did anybody tell these idiots that there is somewhere in the Constitution a reference to the separation of church and state?
Oh, the Constitution, what is that?
Oh, excuse me. That's a piece of paper that was written 200 and some years ago, and it's supposed to be the basis of our...
Or as Bush
governance.
Calls it, that GD piece of paper.
Well, anyhow.
Yeah. We did talk about that that Christmas resolution. I think
that was December 11th, so it could have very easily. But I just ran across it and I thought, gee, what a delightful bunch of nom 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 nom.
Hey, listen, we're
ever seen the production company name for Jimmy Kimmel?
No, I haven't.
It's Jack Hole.
Jack,
don't you love it?
Jack Hole.
Yeah, right.
Well, that's like what
we combine two, you know.
Well, there is a town out in is it Wyoming? Jackson Hole.
No, that's Jackson, Mississippi, or Jackson Hole, whatever. No, this is Jack Hole. You know, we take the last syllable off the first word and the first syllable off the second word, and we just push the two together. I love it. That, you know, that's our Congress.
All right, Marge, listen. Happy New Year, my friend. Have a safe one. I don't care what anybody tells you. Don't drink and drive. All right, Marge? And don't wind up as somebody's designated driver. Thanks, Marge. All right, y'all. Behave yourselves. Please be careful. I know everybody's going to be saying that to you. Amateur night is New Year's Eve. Oh, my God. If you're going to be on the street, please don't be on the street. Right? I'll see you the 8th. Unless something weird happens. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, and a happy new year wherever you are.
I'm going straight to hell. Just like my